Hello, hello.
Hey, Dobby. Long time no talk.
I am recording this conversation, just so you know. Although this is a one-party consent state, what about three-party consent? I don't know.
Hey, do you want the buffer target chat back up again?
Yeah. Yeah, you can turn it up.
Okay. I currently have you both at 50 milliseconds, so...
You sound good.
Now I have you at 160.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have you both at 160 milliseconds on the buff dump.
Yeah, the thing with the buffers is, like, the more the buffer is, the longer the latency is, but the better the sound is. It's all a trade-off.
And I haven't heard, well, I haven't even heard Dobby talk too much.
Dobby, talk too much.
Talk too much? How much is just right? How will I know when I've talked enough?
You know, I really think it was that your computer hadn't been rebooted in 2 weeks or 2 days or something.
Okay.
It really makes a difference, man. I do it every day.
Now, Dobby came through loud and clear on that last one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Why would that affect the buffer? No, see, my buffer is still flickering, though.
Well, the buffer too high is bad, but also, like, too low is bad because buffering it is what allows it to not click. It's kind of complicated.
So right now, everything's on 50.
Yeah. I'm satisfied that it was your computer needing rebooting because it's a lot better now. Read something longish, Davi. Read like a long paragraph or something.
I was sitting in science class. Miss Lessard was writing active and hidden on the board. She began her lesson. An active virus attacks healthy cells and hijacks them to spread itself. Active viruses present symptoms immediately. Science is my favorite subject. It's probably the only thing I like about school, but viruses are so kid stuff for me. Dad is a scientist.
Okay, it's all good. How is that sounding to you, Lou?
That was Lima Charlie, bro. 5x5.
Yeah, man. I mean, I heard a few clicks and stuff, but I didn't hear anything like the cluster fark we were having from note one of that 2-hour song we just played.
Hmm.
Okay, I'll put the episode up, but I'll just put this up as a disclaimer at the beginning of it. So, it wasn't Fiend Phone, it was Davi's computer. We've determined that. Okay. Do you all sign that with your John Hancock gentleman?
In blood.
All right, Lou.
I'll even sign a non-disparaging agreement, although it's not enforceable in California.
Yeah.
I sign that social contract in hamster blood. Hamsters rotating on a spit.
Okay, guys. It's been a good night. I'm going to go do something with this. Take care.
Wimes.
Bye-bye.
Meow.
Meow.
Cock-a-doodle-doo.
Hey, get back on your leash.
I want a longer leash.
This is Mr. Michael Dean broadcasting live and worldwide from the next room over from where my wife is sleeping, which is why I'm not yelling like I usually do. And we got some co-hosts here tonight. We got Mr. Dobby Barker, the Shiny Badger. Are you there, sir?
I'm here. How are you doing?
Welcome to Delicious Dish on NPR. No, this is not Delicious Dish or NPR. Lou Sanderfine is also rounding out. How you doing, Lou?
Hey, this is the titanium meerkat / the leashless Labrador / the chop shop rooster.
The cop shop rooster. The cop block rooster.
Yeah, cop block rooster. Hey.
Yeah. Hey, so we are talking over Fiend Phone, the wonderful product that all the fiends have that nobody else gets to have. It's like we're keeping it all to ourselves until probably tomorrow. Tomorrow night, we may be releasing this thing in beta. If not tomorrow night, the next night. So, yeah, man, we've been working out the bugs. I've been writing the tutorial for it. I've been making the video for it. I've been, we got some video with some images from Crazy Rich and from Lou, from Davi in there. And again, nobody can see that video yet. It's all ours until we release it. You guys saw it. What do you think?
I love the cat unicorns.
Good. You love Superb the cat audio. Unicorns? Yeah. Yep.
I was amazed. I didn't know YouTube could be that clear.
It can. It can, actually.
Only over Fiend Phone.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we did this ad. It's like, it's this crazy psychedelic thing with flying unicorn cats through space going to Alpha Centauri via Fiend Phone. But the audio is Davi and I just kind of talking back and forth. I've never done one of those radio ads that's like, hi, we're two guys yammering back and forth. No, well, what do you think? Well, I don't know. Gee, what do you think? Well, tell the nice people what you think. Like, I've always hated that kind of commercial. and I've never done one, but I decided to do one, and it's a little less annoying than most. But the thing is, this commercial we made that people are going to hear soon is the thing. Like, usually when there's two people yammering back and forth on radio, you're just having to trust them that, like, you know, this colloidal uranium heirloom body armor toothpaste works. But this is actually like a demonstration of the thing. It's like we're doing the audio over Fiendphone. So, yeah, that'll be fun, man. I'm looking forward to it coming out, and I'm getting to name buttons. We were thinking of actually having a thing in the Indiegogo where, like, you get to name a button, but we just decided to do them all ourselves. So,
like, it's the hall in the university?
Yes, yeah, but so there are two buttons we didn't have a name for, and I just named them Turbo Kitty and Turbo Cat, and they really have nothing to do with, like, what they do, but I like those names, so. Yeah.
Groovy.
So, this week is all Lou all the time. I think Lou's going to be on like 8 of the 6 shows, the live shows this week or something. But so, Lou, you got something to read. We got breaking news from George Donnelly, a good guy. If you want to go ahead and read this.
Yes. This is about jury rights.
Speak up, sir. Speak up, sir.
Okay. This is from juryrightsproject.com, and this is a press release. Jury rights activists campaign to end victimless crimes prosecutions in New York City in 2015. New York, December 22nd, 2014. Jury rights activists from New York City and surrounding areas are converging on Manhattan this January with the goal of ending the prosecution of victimless crimes in the city. The campaign consists of phone kiosk advertising and jury nullification pamphleting in the area around the Daniel Patrick Moynihan United States Courthouse at 500 Pearl Street in the Civic Center area of Lower Manhattan. An online educational effort at the website www.jrp.io complements the main campaign. Jurors have the inherent right and unquestionable power to judge not just the facts of a case, but also the law the defendant is accused of violating. Jurors can vote not guilty when they conscientiously believe a just verdict requires it, even if they believe the law has technically been broken. All jurors in the United States have this right still today, but many are completely unaware of it. Jury nullification occurs when jurors vote to acquit, even though they believe the defendant is guilty. Jury nullification is an indisputable fact of American jurisprudence that is regularly, if quietly, practiced today. If you are selected for jury duty, the normal instinct is to find a way out of it, said project facilitator James Babb. But jury duty gives you the incredible opportunity to stop wrongful imprisonment and government tyranny. Jurors are not required to check their consciences at the courthouse door, said Kirsten Tynan, National Director of the Fully Informed Jury Association. Their website is FIJA.org, by the way.
Yeah, it's FIJA, FIJA, like Fully Informed Jury Association.org.
Yeah, but they won't hear this once they are inside. In fact, a prospective juror who does not agree to abandon their conscience and uphold laws they find unjust or unjustly applied will almost certainly be excluded from the jury. In 2011, 86% of federal prisoners, hundreds of thousands of mostly minority Americans, were in a cage due to victimless crimes, said George Donnelly of the Jury Rights Project. It is the urgent call of our times to stop ruining good people's lives over victimless crimes such as drug offenses, as we can do it using the rights we already have in the more than 800-year-old institution of the jury box. Many of us were inspired by former Penn State professor Dr. Julian Heiklin, who has traveled the nation to inform potential jurors of their right to nullify bad laws. We want to build on this work, said Babb. Court employees at 500 Pearl Street were particularly violent and cruel to Dr. Heiklin. I am eager to return and make a difference in this hellish vacuum of justice. Activists aim to run the campaign during at least the month of January and are seeking donors and volunteers to assist in continuing the effort independently via a crowdfunding campaign at Indiegogo.com.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah.
And go on. I met Jim Babb at Pork Fest and interviewed him on the very last day with Ben, and also interviewed his daughter, who was particularly amazing. And we talked about the jury nullification efforts and the things that have gone on with it.
Hey, Lou, hang on a sec there. Hit your buff dump. We're getting some clicks from you.
Oh, okay. But anyway, yeah. Yeah, I got a chance to meet Jim and talk to him. And I also heard a podcast of an interview that he was on last night on, I believe it was called The Crypto Show or something like that. But anyway, he was talking about this particular campaign here.
Yeah, I met Jim Babb too. I didn't know who he was at first, and he came up to me and said, "Hey, Michael Dean, come over to my family's campground and hang out." And I was like, "Wow, that's really cool." Then I realized who he was, and I was like, "Wow, he's a really sweet guy, man. I really like him, and he's very devoted to activism." Davi, you know him pretty well, don't you?
I don't know that I've met him in person, but I have definitely exchanged a number of emails with him. And yeah, I mean, we've been online acquaintances for a long time.
Yeah.
I may have met him at Porkfest. I don't remember.
Yep. And George Donnelly, what's his unconference called? I've participated in it before. He does, the input output unconference, I think the IO unconference. Yeah.
It's like AIO. Yeah, I don't know what it's called, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's fun. I've been on it before. And yeah, man. So jury nullification, it's one of the only places the government actually hands you some power to do good or evil, you know, in this world.
Well, jury nullification also has a very rich history here in America. It was used to nullify the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850, of 1793, and also of Article 4, Section 2, Clause 3 of the Constitution. Back in the 1850s and leading up to the War of Northern Aggression, jurors, particularly northern states, were refusing to convict slaves of being runaway slaves and sending them back to their servitude, which was awful nice.
Yeah.
It was also used in the case of William Penn. There was a I can't really remember the details of it, but Jim was talking about it last night. He was put on trial for doing business with certain people or something like that he wasn't supposed to, and the jury nullified and said, you know what, this is a bogus law. And not only is it being used to end prohibition against plants and other substances, but it was also widely used in the 1920s with the prohibition of alcohol. And the fact that juries were refusing to convict people of possessing and using alcohol or property led to 10 states repealing the law before the federal government even did.
Nice. Nice. Davi, do you know any stories of winning from jury nullification?
I know that there was a marijuana case. I don't remember the name of the defendant.
Oh, in New Hampshire, the Rasta guy.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a New Jersey weed man.
Oh,
that's
ironically,
right.
Ironically, he was in New Jersey.
New Hampshire is the only state that I know of that it's legal for an attorney to tell the jury that jury nullification is an option. I think in a lot of states,
yeah, like it's actually you can use it as a defense.
Yeah, I think in a lot of states, if the defendant or his attorney instructed the jury of that, they would probably charge you with jury tampering. I'm not really sure. I don't know. What happened with Julian Heckland? What's his story?
He fled the country?
Yeah.
That's essentially what happens. He went to Israel because you have sort of birthright citizenship in Israel if you're Jewish. And so he is currently a refugee from American justice there in, I mean, not that, that he committed any sort of real crime, but
yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Cool, man.
Yeah, my understanding of it is he was strongly advocating the jury nullification, you know, going back to, you know, times where things were good in America. People could actually not be domesticated house pets and bow down subservience to the state. But my understanding is he got beat up outside of courthouses and not by criminals or what was commonly defined as criminals, but he got beat up by government goons and thugs and cops and shiny badges and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well,
so the penalty for telling people what their rights are is a beating and possibly death.
Sounds like it, man.
Welcome
yeah.
to USSA.
It's one of those things that gives me hope during nullification. It's just, Not many people know about it, I think, overall. So it's really good that people do outreach with it.
Well, we have a fully informed jury association group here in the Failed State Project of Detroit. And there's some activism that's been going on, and there's some more that will be coming up in the near future. And it is targeting these victimless malum prohibitum decrees of cannabis and other plants. And it's also focusing on people that are being charged for violations of all the medical marijuana laws that are going on. Because when you say tax it, regulate it, and legalize it, well, then you get it regulated to death. And people still wind up getting thrown in jail because the cops have to protect their thiefdom.
Their thiefdom.
Williams.
Cool. We'll be back after this trip to the free market.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends. Shiny bat.
Was wrong. That's my new segment because I'm wrong a lot because I talk a lot. And you know, when you talk a lot off the top of your head, you occasionally get things wrong. Like you say, you know, New Orleans when you meant New York, or you say 1996 when you meant 1986. And I guess there are some internet philosophers who say the state is right and good when they really have generally said that it's not. That happened.
It's just a slip of the tongue.
It's just a slip of your entire, worldview as a slip of the tongue. But, so I like to correct.
It's work.
It's what? What's that?
It's a slip of his life's work.
Yeah, it's a slip of his life's work. So I like to say when I've been wrong to, get the record straight, but also to encourage others to come forth and do that. Because a lot of people who do talk media really have a problem ever admitting they're wrong. And I do it like 4 times a week on here probably. So I'm trying to set a good example. So I was wrong about, you know that thing in the movie Office Space where like they try to make this computer virus, it'll steal like a penny off of every transaction and it ends up like working way too well. And they have like $1 million overnight and they're like, the software didn't work. It worked too well. Oh, I always forget to carry the decimal place. I'm so stupid. So I basically forgot to carry the decimal place. Freedom Fiends torrent link, there's two of them. There's the current one that updates, and then there's the first one with the first 500 episodes. The one that I listed on the website, if you go to the Freedom Fiends site and go to the Torrent Club link over on the right side, my friend Vaslav in Prague found this and told me this morning. He's the guy that came out and had Christmas with us last year, and we went shooting, went and shot rifles on Christmas, went and shot AK-47s out on state land, and we were like the only people there for like miles, and it blew his mind, because you can have guns in the Czech Republic, but you have to go like, you know, to a government place to shoot them. You can't just go outside and shoot them. He was like, wow, this is great. Like, I wanted to leave after an hour because it was really cold. He would have stayed there all day, man. So, but he's really smart and he found this error in my ways. I actually, when I made the feed for the old one, when I archived the old one like 9 months ago, I put a space in the file, in one of the file parts of the file name. But then when I put it on the site, I like corrected the space, you know, I just filled it in so there's no space and the link doesn't work. And I've had all these people say like your torrent link doesn't work, and I figure it's, you know, they don't know what they're doing, or they have a different, you know, torrent device than I do, a different torrent program. And I've tried to help, but I just kind of like blew them off because I was like, I don't know, man, it works for me. And so I fixed it, and I did a blog post on the Freedom Fiends blog. If you go to the freedomfiends.com/blog, the top post right now explains this and gives the corrected URL. And the corrected URL is now in the Torrent Club page. So, you know, we've probably missed out on like dozens of people who would have been torrenting who aren't, because I multitasked nonstop and made a tiny, tiny error that is a very big error to a computer. You know, it's kind of like there was this 60s, like mainframe computing wisdom that said, to err is human. To really foul things up takes a computer. So there you go. I was wrong, guys.
What do you got? I haven't been wrong about anything since the last time I was on the show, because I've not uttered a single word.
Yeah? Are you taking a vow of silence?
Oath of silence.
I remain silent.
So let's talk about Fight Club, man. I do want to say that Barack Obama is a liar. He's a socialist and his feet stink. All governments are based on force, aggression, theft, fraud, and murder, and kidnapping. And so that's like our political lesson for the day. So we're going to just talk about the movie Fight Club for about an hour. And, you know, somebody actually asked me, like, oh, are you trying to do what Molyneux does and like do link bait and review movies and do like pop culture stuff? And I'm like, no. First of all,
yes, because Molyneux came up with that.
Yeah. He came up with link bait. First of all, reviewing a like 20-year-old movie isn't really link bait. Secondly, that works on the internet, but it doesn't work on radio. Like, the 34 stations we're on are really cool and like us and let us be on, but more stations aren't going to take us if we keep doing these just weird, like, this doesn't have anything to do with politics. What are you talking about? But we like it. So when we get back, we're going to tell you why Marla Singer doesn't exist and then riff off of that for an hour.
Click on your speakers to follow the link.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Bring us back, Lou.
This is the Freedom Fiends. All fee phone all the time.
We're still working out the bugs. We'll have them all worked out by tomorrow night. So
yeah, Derek swatted the bugs with his tablet.
Yeah.
His Kindle.
It probably also isn't helping that I'm doing a bunch of stuff on my computer, and I'm like the board op master computer here, and I'm like, you know, editing video and stuff. It's probably that. But I can't stop, man. I can't stop. I almost was going to cancel the show. I was going to be like, we'll do a throw on a repeat, and you know, I'll go make Fiend Phone happen. But I'm like, I can multitask, and it's part of the experience. So you guys go ahead, man. Davi, talk about this weird theory about Fight Club.
I don't know. I think I've disproven the theory over the break, but let's start at the beginning.
Well, you're burying the lead. What's the theory?
So this is actually, I really like this theory, and I'll bet it holds true for the movie. But if you go to jackdurden.com, there's a whole manifesto arguing that Marla Singer from Fight Club, spoiler alert, doesn't exist, and that she's a figment of the main character's imagination. So if you guys have seen Fight Club, Tyler Durden is the narrator's alter ego, and we call the narrator Jack, for lack of a better term. But this guy's arguing that Marla is also an alter ego, and that the movie is essentially a battle for the psyche of Jack between his masculine and feminine side, and that the feminine side wins.
Hey, Davi,
opposite.
You got to back off your mic just a little bit.
Back there. Off.
Yep. And this All is right. a teaching hospital, so we can't see each other. People don't know. We're like, you know, thousands of miles apart.
Yeah. So if you've seen Fight Club, it is sort of a macho manifesto. It's about men who hate women and it, you know, kind of drop out fight each other.
The guy who wrote the book is gay. That came out a few years after the book came out. Yeah. And after you know that, it really makes a lot more sense, because they're not having sex, but they're kind of like living like a weird husband and wife. You know, they're like tying each other's bow tie and cooking each other's meals and kind of waiting on each other, like more than friends.
They're like an asexual gay couple.
Yeah.
I can see that. They're like a gay couple and like who've been married for 20 years and the passion has died down, but they have a great routine.
Well, they have a lot of passion. They beat each other up often. And right. like it.
But this argument, like, this sounded like hokum to me at first.
Hokum.
Some of this stuff is phenomenal. Yeah. Hokum, meaning the castings of.
Did you call Jack the narrator?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's actually a term, a literary term that Jack definitely fits. It's an unreliable narrator. Do you know that term?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's like,
I love unreliable narrators.
The guy, most of the books and movies I like have unreliable narrators. And I would say that us on the Freedom Fiends, certain times, probably are unreliable narrators, especially when I was wrong.
Yeah. I used to joke that I was the unreliable narrator of my own life.
Yeah, there you go. And of my own movie.
Now, I've never even heard this unreliable narrator. Please tell me what this is. I can't wait for the newsletter.
Go ahead, Lou. I mean, Tavi.
So I first heard about this because I grew up
reading a lot of Edgar Allan Poe. I was really into Edgar Allan Poe, and the classic unreliable narrator,
Telltale Heart,
is the Telltale Heart, where the main character, the narrator, the first person narration comes from a person who is insane and murders an innocent person out of his own insanity, and then hallucinates a heartbeat that drives him crazy enough to turn himself in. And the fact is that there was nothing evil about the man that he killed, and that there was no heartbeat. It was his own, maybe his own heartbeat, or maybe his own hallucination. And you're sort of watching the story, trying to figure out what's going on based on the observations of a person you know to be insane. And so what's really going on is sort of up to interpretation.
Yep.
So for example, in Fight Club, the reliable narrator is the video camera. At the very end, we see a fight between Tyler and Jack through surveillance footage, where we see Jack beating himself up and sort of Tyler Durden disappears, but reappears when it's from Jack's perspective. So that's how you know that he's a figment of his imagination. But there's also a scene in the middle that I've never noticed, but this website has screen captures where you see Tyler and Marla walking down a hall past a mirror, and neither of them has any reflection. So it's almost like that's the reliable narrator showing up again, saying, hey, Marla isn't there either.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is weird. Yeah,
looking at this article, I mean, yeah, some of this stuff makes sense, but I just expect to see grainy black and white pictures with red arrows drawn in.
In this one.
Some of this is kind of out there.
Oh, it's totally out there. Oh, here's a red arrow or a red circle. Yeah. So, it's totally out there. It's totally wild and crazy, but I mean, fiction can be wild and crazy. And there's definitely a lot of stuff about Fight Club that's sort of designed to be gone over and over again to pick out the details, right?
Yeah. It's a great movie to study from a screenwriting standpoint too, because it kind of breaks all the rules. Like, first of all, there's like voiceover internal dialogue narration through the whole movie. And that's generally, you know, in screenwriting schools, that's taught that's really lazy. Like, you know, don't tell him what he's thinking, show him what he's thinking, you know, like have it happen on the screen. And like, I mean, really, like those sections are generally just like passages straight out of the novel. And it's very lazy.
But it's supposed to be lazy. It comes off as lazy because the character is lazy.
Yeah, he is.
It has like self-referential cigarette burns, right? Where he talks about the changeover. He's like, there's a little thing in the corner that nobody ever notices. And blink, there it is.
Yep.
And ever since then, I've always noticed it.
Yeah, I've noticed it before. But you don't see them so much anymore because a lot of theaters have digital projection now and there's no changeover. But those are also not called cigarette burns. That was made up for the screenplay. But yeah, I mean, that thing is really perfect. I mean, it's a really long movie. It's a long movie. It's like, it's 2 hours and 50 minutes or something. It might be 3 hours. I'm not sure, but it is relentless and I dig it. And Davi, you and I were talking about how it was marketed versus how it actually is. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, yeah, it was sort of marketed as an action film, like Fight Club, where men go to fight. Let's watch men fight, like as if we're watching Mortal Kombat or something.
Yeah, and it's
it was not that at all.
The fighting is like the smallest part of that movie, really, as to what
there's
important.
Like a montage.
Yeah, there's a couple.
There's
montages.
A montage fight,
but you get to see Jared Leto's face beat to hamburger, which is kind of fun.
Oh yeah, that was very satisfying. If you were a fan of My So-Called Life, that scene was you grew up to watch that scene.
Yeah.
But still, like wardrobe, for example, Tyler and Marla wear the same fur coat.
Interesting.
That's odd. Like, yeah, why would that be?
I mean, we're used to that with like two different shows from the same network, like, you know, the meth lab coffee making meth lab with lab equipment from Breaking Bad showing up in Walking Dead, but not in the same movie, the two different characters.
Yeah.
But,
well, I mean, I've done Easter eggs for set design and prop department stuff. And this is the kind of thing that directors and movie makers do when they want to say something, when they want something for the audience to kind of hiccup on and like, well, what was that? Why did that happen? If they pick up on it at all. But
well, are they wearing the same coat, or are they both wearing fur coats?
It looks like the same coat. I mean, I'm sure it's physically not the same coat because they have such a different build. But this is in the scene where Tyler reveals that he is a hallucination. He is wearing the same coat that Marlo was wearing the night she met him.
You know, I really felt that when they revealed that in the hotel room and like he stressed it over and over, like, you have to realize this, you have to realize this. And then they showed the empty chair. I like the empty chair, but I felt like the verbal parts telling over and over and over were kind of like for the people in the cheap seats. Like, I kind of figured it out.
Yeah.
You know, like 5 minutes before that, the first time I saw
it. Oh, I do that. I do that for sure. When I'm writing Survivor Max, I let the front row know like two chapters before I let the back row know.
That's a really good description, man, for a book. That's funny, sir. I respect that, sir. You know, it's interesting how they call everyone sir in that movie. It's got a few levels. Like, you know, it's a paramilitary kind of thing. Like, there is sort of a military ranking in this.
Like monkeys being shot into space.
That is the
space
most
space monkey. That
is the most awesome description of you know, for the common good. It's kind of horrible. And then there's also, like, most of the people came from jobs where they had to call people sir. It kind of seems like they're co-opting it, like, you know, black people using the N-word. Like, we're going to take that word of having to call someone sir and call everybody sir, you know? And then
they all have labor jobs, right? And they all call their bosses sir.
Well, labor jobs are white collar, you know, blue collar or white collar, and those people all have to call people sir. And the third thing is, it's kind of a kink thing, you know, like a submissive calling
Thank
a dominant
you, sir,
sir. yeah and there's definitely kind of some like non-sexual kink. Well, there is sexual kink too, with like his, you know, what's going on with Marla in the other room that you can hear through the whole house, and it's making the rafters fall apart. But you know, the dynamic between Jack and Tyler, but also between like both of them and all the space monkeys, you know,
and all the recruits. Yeah, it is absolutely sort of a
voluntary,
voluntary slavery.
Yeah,
but to me, that's more paramilitary. That's like boot camp, breaking you up so they can rebuild you or whatever.
Well, Lou, you've been in the service. Tell us about it. Tell us about boot camp. How do they break you, sir?
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah, they do break you pretty hard. They strike out any form of individuality. So, with military being a socialist type entity, meaning owned and controlled by the government, monopoly and all of our stuff. But yeah, they break down the individuality and then they start rebuilding you back up again. Now, I will say that they do help to develop confidence in people and also to maybe develop leadership a little bit.
Well, that's why employers love to hire people out of the military. First of all, they get tax breaks, but second of all, you know, they have compliant space monkeys.
Yeah, but the tax breaks aren't really that much. As a matter of fact, in many cases, it costs more to fill out the paperwork than the tax break is actually paying out.
I'll bet some people do it, you know, for a sense of thanking, you know, for nationalism or patriotism too.
So this theory, it may hold up for the movie. This theory may hold up for the movie, but the announcement of a Fight Club sequel sort of blows it out of the water. So, like, I'm reading this story, and apparently the writer, Chuck, I can't pronounce his name, Palahniuk.
I've heard him describe it. It's very easy to say. It's like a woman's name and a man's name. It's Paula and Nick.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Chuck Palahniuk is going to be doing a Fight Club sequel to come out in May as a graphic novel. And apparently the plot is that it's Jack and Marla, like, married and pregnant in a sort of failing marriage, and Tyler sort of shows up to terrorize their marriage.
That sounds like a sitcom. I'd watch that a half hour every Sunday.
You know, listen to The Fiends in May. I am getting this graphic novel.
Okay.
So I'll get you an amateur review
Tune in in May and after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Bring us back, Dobby.
Hey, this is Dobby, and you are listening to The Freedom Fiends with Michael W. Dean and Lusander Fien.
Worms.
And what are we talking about?
I don't know. We just kept the conversation going during the break. We could discuss some of those aspects of Fight Club, the movie and the novel. So what's this sequel that's coming out? Tell me about it.
So he apparently made, he said something at Comic-Con about
working on a sequel or being interested in a sequel, and then fans sort of held him to it because you can't say something like that to a room full of Comic-Con fans and without them sort of, you know, ripping the sequel out of you if you won't write it.
We just got a note from Nathan the Ninja Squirrel, who said that Chuck Palahniuk is the Norwegian black metal of the literary world. I like that. I mean, I would think that'd be Edgar Allan Poe, but, you know, yes. The new one is, yeah. Poe is kind of cheesy, man.
So here, can I?
Go ahead.
Let me read you this. This is an interview with Hustler magazine, apparently, where he messed up to what's going on with the sequel.
I just read
it. What better place to talk about Fight Club?
I just look at it for the interviews.
Yeah, right. Because, you know, they interviewed Chuck Palahniuk.
Yeah.
So here's the synopsis.
I think the only reason Hustler interviews people is so people can still say, oh, I just buy that magazine for the interviews.
I download the audio interviews.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's books on tape. I didn't know that.
One of my favorite is Playboy used to do that, too. They started that. There was an interview with Salvador Dali where this is one of my favorite lines in an interview ever. They said, have you ever taken LSD? And he said, no, I am LSD.
So here's the synopsis. It says, the sequel will be told from, at first, the submerged perspective of Tyler Durden as he observes the day-to-day tedium of the narrator's life. Because 20th Century Fox created the convention of calling the protagonist Jack, I'm calling him Cornelius. He's living a compromised life with a failing marriage, unsure about his passion for his wife. The typical midlife BS. Likewise, Marla is unsatisfied and dreams of accessing the wild man she'd fallen in love with. She tampers with the small pharmacy of drugs that her husband needs to suppress Tyler, and then go figure, Tyler reemerges. So, He's chemically holding him down. I mean, that's kind of like, that's wrongful imprisonment, isn't it? Tyler deserves to be free.
Well, I've heard they used to call Thorazine was kind of the first psych med, like back in the 60s. And it, you know, had it was all side effects all the time. Like it just turned you into a zombie. And the nickname for Thorazine back then was the chemical straitjacket.
Well, it sounds like Cornelius / Jack is using... Or should be using Compliacin.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the effects of a chemical straitjacket.
I don't know.
With none of the drooling.
This could be like boring relationship drama, or it could be really fascinating and interesting. I don't know. I could go. I'll let you know. I'm going to read it. There's no way I'm not going to read it.
Yeah.
Maybe it should be turned into like a Sunday night sitcom.
There you go.
I'd love to see it on AMC.
Yeah. Like a series, yeah. Fight Club, the ongoing series.
Walking
the
Dead fight, crossover.
The Fighting Dead.
There you go. Where you just walk around boxing zombies. I think that already exists.
Now, hey, what if the space monkeys were not real either? What if they were just a figment of Cornelius's / Jack's imagination?
So this website, jackdurden.com, argues that everybody's fake. There's a section on Bob not being real. There's a section on the house not being real. And so, like, from his perspective, essentially Jack lives in Marla's apartment and never leaves. Like, Marla's apartment is actually his apartment and he just never left.
So he's just like,
the argument for the Paper Street Soap Company not being real is that Paper Street is like a municipal term for a street that doesn't exist. Like if they have their like city planning and they're like writing out streets that they haven't built yet and haven't named yet, they call them paper streets because they only exist on paper.
Oh, news you can use.
So there you go. The Paper Street Soap Company only exists on paper, which might actually be true anyway.
All right, we'll be back for hour two of the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the freak market. going to go do stuff, and these guys are going to do some radio. I don't know what the topic is, but I'm building Fiend Phone, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, kitty cats and worms. All right, hit it, fellas.
Hey, before we jump into our next subject, I would like to do a little public service announcement. I'm going to read this as I make it up as I go along.
Okay.
Okay. Are you interested in learning economics?
No.
Have you ever found it to be difficult or daunting or even frightening? Well, now you can learn with the Economics in One Lesson Reading Club. The Art of Not Being Governed is sponsoring a reading club where they will go over Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson, and a chapter will be released each day. The chapters aren't that long. As a matter of fact, the whole page is only 100, or whole, the whole book is only 187 pages long. If you're on Face Beef, you can go to Economics in One Lesson Reading Club, or you can just go to notbeinggoverned.com and look for Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson. It will have all the chapters in there. And you've read this book, haven't you, Dobby?
I've listened to the audiobook.
Okay. Yeah, and it is available on Audible. It's probably on YouTube also. But what did you think of the book?
I thought it was good. It was pretty comprehensive. I was not economically illiterate at the time that I read it. So I was sort of reading it for rhetorical devices on how to explain these concepts to others. And it was definitely good for that. It was very concise.
Yeah, the simplicity of it, because economics isn't this big, giant, strange monster that, you know, we would think it is if we watch the mainstream media where they say, well, don't worry about that. We have experts in the Central Planning Bureau that will take care of everything. And it just breaks these things down in such a simplicity that you can actually think for yourself, and you can tell when the politicians are full of humor, which is basically every time their lips move.
Yeah, I sort of think of economics like chess. The rules are simple, but the implications are huge.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, as Ludwig von Mises had once said, each new intervention is an attempt to deal with the unintended consequences of the previous interventions.
Right.
So basically, government comes up with a policy, screws things up, and, of course, they need more policies to deal with their screw-ups from the previous policies. So, yeah, good stuff. Go to notbeinggoverned.com, or once again, the Facebook event on that is Economics in One Lesson Reading Club. And speaking of new laws, what do we have from the People's Republic of California? So, yeah, there's an article here, and it comes to us from the LA Times. And what's the title of this? California's New Laws for 2015. How are you affected? And let's see. Yeah, hundreds of California laws take effect with the new year, including several drafted in response to corruption scandals in the legislature.
Government's trying to fix government, man. That'll work.
Yeah, yeah. And they're going to use laws to do it. The mass shooting in Isla Vista last spring.
I don't know what that is.
From what I saw, it's that Elliot Rodger guy who was an Uber dweeb, and he couldn't score, so he decided to kill a bunch of women.
Yeah,
I lived
in L.A., but, like, I don't even, you know, you live in L.A., it's such a self-contained world of, like, 100 different little cities that, you know, something 3.5 hours away in San Diego area, you're like, where is that? Costa Rica? You know, you don't know. So.
Yeah, but anyway, it's
I think Davi's back. Is Davi back? Hello, Davi. Have you been contacted?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, what happened, man?
I don't know. The whole thing just crashed, and so I had to back all the way out and back all the way back in.
Oh, we'll fix that before tomorrow night. All right. Cool, man. Thank you.
Now, did we get a new version of Fiend Phone to download and install during the break? Because this thing is coming out in new versions, like, every couple minutes, it seems like.
Oh, man. Derek's asleep. He has a day job. Like, he has
you
to,
let him
he
sleep?
Has to, he has to go to work. I let him sleep. I am honored that he is working with me on this. Yeah, it's kind of I'm not a programmer, but
you play one on the radio?
I badger programmers into doing my bidding. No, I encourage programmers into collaborating with me and pay them, you know, most of the money of the little bit I can get. But it kind of reminds me of you know, this program wouldn't exist if I hadn't said, hey, let's have this exist. And I actually went through like 5 different programmers trying to get them to do it. including Derek, like 2 years ago. And then we went off, you know, and made Meow Bit and then came back to this. And it kind of reminds me, though, there's a thing on that show. What is it? Peep Show. Have you guys ever seen that? Either of you?
No. What's the premise?
It's an English show. It's basically like a British version, modern version of The Odd Couple. If, you know, Oscar was kind of a conservative guy who worked in an office and wait, no, Felix was a conservative guy who worked in the office and Oscar was a bisexual rave DJ, bedroom DJ who likes drugs a lot. But there's one where the conservative guy like writes a book called Business Secrets of the Pharaohs. It's kind of a running joke because the business secrets of the pharaohs were basically owning slaves, but they never mention that in it. He's actually writing a book for businessmen called that, and he finally gets a publisher for it. And the ne'er-do-well unemployed roommate's like, "You got a publisher for your novel or for your book? What's next? A builder for your cathedral, a composer for your symphony?" And that's kind of like how I feel. Like, I feel honored, though. Like, I have a programmer for my idea, and, you know, we're making it work. It's all zeros and ones, and Derek knows how to put them in the right order, and it's pretty cool.
But without slavery, who would build the pyramids?
I know. We built the pyramids. Who's this we of which you're singing? Bare Naked Ladies. That's the name of that band. All right, so where were we, guys?
Is that really the Bare Naked Ladies?
I think so.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Huh.
All right, so...
I had no idea.
So before Davi decided to take a sabbatical into 000110 land, what were we talking about, Lou?
Oh, we were talking about California and their 6,532 new laws that go into effect in 2015.
There you go, Davi.
Oh, is that where we went?
Yeah, that's where we went.
Oh, man.
It wasn't quite that many, but I'm sure that was probably their goal. According to the article, and I got this from Davi, Democratic Governor Jerry Brown, who meanwhile rode a wave of popularity to a historic fourth and final term, vetoed 143 bills the legislature sent him, saying they cost too much money, did not improve the state, or created unnecessary regulations. He signed 930 others into law.
Do you think he read 930 laws?
No.
Do you think he read this article or understands them as well as this article describes them?
I don't think he read the title of 930 laws.
Right. Probably not.
Nima Fadadi and I used to have an ongoing joke that, you know, that they talked about in 1984, there was the telescreen and in everyone's home, like you could turn it down, but you couldn't turn it off. And that basically what that's going to be is it's going to be everyone's smartphone pretty soon. Like there's just going to be a ticker at the bottom with all the text of all the new laws as they're being put into law. And then we realized that like they couldn't fit them all without putting them too fast to read. So it would just be a ticker constantly of like the names of the new laws that are being passed that you have to learn to abide by.
I think, you know, laws I'm should not be even like sure. Bitcoin mining.
How so? I mean, Lou. How should laws be like Bitcoin mining?
That's how you mine kleptocurrency.
The further along you go, the more difficult it is to create new laws.
Pass them. I like that. What's kleptocurrency, Don?
Oh, that's clever. It's you know, currency that's stolen from you, or that by using you are being stolen from.
Do you remember? You know what? There was one of the weirdest like malwares I've heard of. Was there was like I don't you know like that was bigger in the early days of the internet. Like now people can block them easier. I do want to say that I've gotten rid of Norton and I'm using Avast, mateys, which is a free antivirus program. And this wasn't my main computer. I never got a virus from my main computer, but one of my other computers that I don't use much actually had a virus for like a year that Norton did not catch. And Avast caught it as soon as I got rid of Norton, you know, got rid of the pay one and put on the free one.
Was Norton the virus?
No, it was, but it was weird because the reason Norton didn't catch it was this virus named itself notepad.exe. And Norton is so stupid that it just went by the file name on that and was like, oh, that's from Microsoft. That's good. Man, that's like kindergarten level virus hiding stealth, you know?
I think my laptop got afflicted with the government virus today because it's slowing down. It's not working very well. It's dawdling. When I type stuff, it takes like 30 seconds for it to appear on the
screen. Maybe that's what the clicks are coming from, you know, because we haven't really had
this
much.
It's a work slowdown.
We haven't had this much clicks before. I think you should, what's your antivirus program there, brother?
I have Kaspersky. It came when I got the last computer that I spilled the coffee on.
Yeah. That I think you should uninstall that and put on Avast free version, man.
Avast me mateys.
That's my concept for my news you can use for the day. So where were we, gentlemen? This is all tangents all the time.
You know, I don't even think that Governor Brown signed his name 930 times.
Yeah, he probably has like a pen unit that just copies his.
Or you think it's just click boxes?
I don't know, because that guy was governor before and got run out of town, and then he's back. How'd that happen?
Well, yeah, we have a very short institutional memory here.
Well, it's called battered citizen syndrome. People go with the devil that they know.
Have you guys seen the College Humor video of you might be dating a jerk, and it's like a British girl telling an American girl that her country is sort of a jerk?
No, I haven't.
It's pretty funny. Like, he reads your text messages. You let him read your text messages.
I know.
It's a good video. We should check it out sometime soon.
Maybe.
But so crazy laws passed in California, as if there were not enough.
Maybe we should link that video in the show notes. I want to see it now. More Freedom Fiends on the good side of this.
Freedom Fiends. All laws, all the time. Tell me where the law touched you. Show me on the doll, Lou.
Well, I haven't been touched by the law in quite a while, and I'm feeling a little bit neglected. It's not like I put on a bunch of weight or anything like that, you know. But yeah, out in California, which I am fortunate enough not to live there, a bunch of new laws going in effect on January 1st. Some of them won't be starting until July. One of them is the prohibition of single-use grocery bags.
What?
Lovely. Yep. And that's been like a virus spreading throughout California county by county. And then somebody made the argument finally, well, if all these counties have to have separate laws, we ought to just have a law at a state level.
That's so square.
Because it's too confusing.
Yeah, and the logical response to that is maybe we shouldn't have laws on, you know, garbage or grocery bags, because what are they actually expecting to do? I actually come up with a good idea. And I would also add that, you know, these grocery bags aren't single use. When I go to Trader Joe's, they have the paper bags, and I use those for garbage bags here at home, or I'll put stuff in them. I'll take my returnable bottles back to Trader Joe's in that bag. And because I live in Michigan and soda bottles and cans are a fiat currency.
I live in Michigan and so do bottles and cans.
Yeah. Yeah.
I use bottles, them for kitty litter.
Yeah, bottles and cans, they live here in Michigan. But yeah.
I'll tell you exactly what the effect of this law is it means that people burn more fossil fuels. And that's because they're shopping more often for smaller quantities of things because they have to, carry the things out. They get inside, they realize they've forgotten their bag, they decide to shop for only what they can carry. And so they go to the grocery store like three times a week instead of once a week, which means they're burning all this gasoline and they're holding up the line at the grocery store.
So most people in California commit three nuisances a week.
Yep.
Three and four. The other thing
is all of the grocery store's internal architecture is sort of designed for a checker and a bagger. And that means that the bagger is supposed to be bagging while you're paying. But now you as the customer are responsible for bagging while you're paying because you're holding the bags. The bagger doesn't have the bags, which means that the customer now has two jobs. Two employees now have one job.
That was, I heard like a weird like Max Headroom thing there. Did you hear that, Lou?
Yes, I did.
That was pretty cool. I really think I should stop messing around on the computer that we're using. I'm going to stop. So.
Yeah, you probably should. But yeah, when I go to the grocery store, like if I go to Walmart, I go through the self-check if I can. I mean, if it's not open, then I'll go through the cash register. But I rather go through and do it myself. I get through so much quicker. I don't have to deal with any silly questions or any of the goofiness. Now, occasionally I'll have to have one of the, not really a manager. I don't know what you would call it. Like the babysitter for the self-checkout thing that comes over and verifies that I am old enough to
the person who's doing the job of a robot. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But and they'll have to come over and verify that I am old enough to purchase that camping item, like the, what was it? The
fuel,
little camp saw that I bought. It's, it looks kind of like a garrote. So it's this, wire, but it's really rough and it's got loops on the end and you can use that to cut through small branches. You could probably use it on bigger stuff too, but your arms would probably be burning by the time you did that. But anyway,
I do want to say that I've switched off of the computer that's running Fiend Phone and moved over to another computer, and things seem to be better so far. We'll see when Davi comes on, but it does say in the manual I'm writing to not do things on the computer in the beta version while you're running it. And it does recommend getting a like $100 used computer to run it on a dedicated computer. I always run audio stuff on a different computer than what I'm working on, you know, because computers, used computers are cheap. So anyway, go on, Davi.
Yeah, I am. I'm still here. Yeah, I didn't drop off. I am hearing a lot of sort of echoing. And so I can't really tell whether or not I'm hearing you live or not.
I think you're tripping.
That must be it. No, I'm caught in a loop.
Well, we'll know tomorrow.
Groundhog's
the basic rollout only guarantees for two users, and tomorrow night's just going to be Davi and I, so we'll see how it goes. But
and you know, if they're not happy, they can have their money back.
Yeah, man.
So the grocery bags. How about those cloth ones? You know, the ones that if you don't wash them every single time you use them, you have to worry about diseases building up in the
infestation. They're tropical forests of bacteria. That's what they are.
Lou, get up on your mic a little more. Please.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
I am on my microphone.
Yeah. Freedom Fiends.
I'll be on my microphone when we come back.
Freedom Fiends Radio School, live, without a net, on a wire, like on the fiendphone.com page. I'm the bison. You guys are the birds.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Freedom Fiends. With Lusander Fiend and Max Headroom. All right, so what's up, guys? What's on your minds?
I have traveled here across the vastness of time and space from the distant 55 milliseconds ago. And as a result...
That worked.
What's that?
That worked.
All right, cool.
Yeah, we turned our buffers up, so that's going into the manual. Yeah, man. So you're talking about the Confederate flag in California. Start that.
Yeah, so one of the laws that passed in this article... Well, I'll just read it, at least the synopsis. Says this is in the civil rights category, and it says state entities are barred from displaying or selling copies of the Confederate flag or objects marked with it unless the image appears in a book, digital medium, or state museum for educational or historical purposes.
In the state museum of shame. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So this was originally proposed as a just straight state ban on selling Confederate flags anywhere, and so they sort of marched it back to state entities are barred from displaying or selling it, which is, I guess, the right direction, but I mean, it's still sort of like it's a strange rule.
I don't like that flag, and I don't like what it represents, but I like to challenge nanny laws. I'm wondering if we put a Confederate flag somewhere in Fiend Phone, if it would be banned in California.
Well, no, see, it's saying state entities are barred from, maybe that would ban California bureaucrats from using it.
That'd be worth doing. We just have a list of like an icons tab, like a tab with nothing but icons that are banned by various bureaucrats for their use to keep
right.
the state.
So I don't see a lot. I live in California. I don't see a lot of Confederate flags around. The only place I've ever seen them are in the dollar store where it was like a do-rag that was Confederate flag.
I don't know. Didn't
whatever.
I mean, there have been some white power organizations in California. They probably had them hanging in their pickup trucks or something at one point.
You know, that's the other thing. The only people I have ever met who venerated the Confederate flag for any reason, it was because they were secessionists, not because they were white supremacists.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just playing with, like movie cliches, but I'm sure there are, I have known a few white supremacists in Virginia who used to go to punk rock shows who flew that flag. It happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's a mixed message? It's just like the don't tread on me on the don't tread on me flag. It's like it means something to some people and something else to other people. And like, I just don't like mixed messages. That's why I don't like it.
I really like the don't tread on me Scottish flag with thistle. Yeah.
I wish that I had floated that meme out during the Scottish independence vote. I feel like it would have gotten better legs then, but I forgot.
Yep.
Yeah, I really don't even care about flags.
Fun yeah. with flags with Sheldon Cooper.
Dr. Sheldon Cooper.
Yeah.
We can move on to badges. Did you know that in California, they have doubled the fine for impersonating an officer?
What's the fine?
Because we have a big problem with that in California.
From what to what?
Well, what is...
It was raised from $1,000 to $2,000 because, you know, there's been a crime wave of people impersonating. It even says peace officers. We don't even have any peace officers. We need more people out there pretending.
Who's this we of which you're speaking?
I'm talking California. I live in California. And, you know, we is, it's the royal we, and the king is the state.
Now, let me just clarify this a little bit. What it says in the article is badges. Those convicted of using a badge to impersonate a peace officer will pay a higher fine, $2,000 rather than $1,000. Well, every cop is impersonating a peace officer and they use their badge. So they all have to just like give $2,000 every minute to the state over their impersonations.
Huh. Every minute. It's not like every time they're caught.
Every minute. It doesn't say every minute, does it?
No, I'm just saying that it should because they're every minute they're impersonating a peace officer.
They are. I get it. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, there aren't many laws that affect the government. I mean, there are, but you know, they're rarely enforced or selectively enforced. Every once in a while
it's almost like a separate class or something.
Yeah. It's a caste system.
Laws for thee, not for me. Here's another one. In addition, public officials are now barred from using campaign funds to pay fines for improper personal use of political funds.
Can they pay them out they pay the fine out of their improperly gathered funds?
Read that again. I got to wrap my head around that.
Public officials are now barred from using campaign funds to pay fines for improper personal use of political funds.
and the thing is, this probably had to go in law. They wrote this law because someone did that, and right, it wasn't legal six months ago. Legal, yeah.
I like this one. This is like in the sort of realm of like, you know, barking up the wrong tree. So this is a ban on toy weapons, or at least a regulation of toy weapons, in response to law enforcement shootings of minors brandishing toy guns. Manufacturers must now make toys brightly colored so officers can easily distinguish them from real firearms. So it's not that we should like train our police officers not to shoot children. It's that we should make them have neon green. You know,
now I wonder if it's illegal to paint a real gun to look like a toy gun. Probably, but maybe
that'll never happen.
At some point it wasn't, you know, when they had a law like that. Yeah. The thing about
or a real gun, like a toy gun. Like, why isn't the guy with the real gun painting it neon green because of this law?
Yeah. The thing about nanny laws is like every single one of them restricts somebody from moving in some direction, figuratively or literally. If it keeps going, eventually the only thing you're going to be legally allowed to do, and they'll be more enforced, the only thing you're going to be able to do is like get up out of your bed in your prison cell sized government apartment and step onto a treadmill and run all day to like generate income for the government and then go back to your cot.
Vote and pay taxes. Those are the only things legal in California.
That'll be the only reason you'll only be able to leave your house to vote and pay taxes.
Yeah.
Hey, here's another one. The governor also approved a law prohibiting owners of a professional sports teams from deducting league penalties from their taxes. In April, a record $2.5 million fine was levied by the National Basketball Association against then Los Angeles Clippers owner Donald Sterling, whose disparaging comments about African Americans caused public outrage.
So you can't treat fines like the cost of doing business.
You can't do what?
Because you can't treat fines like
they're the cost of doing business.
You can't write them off in your taxes.
Right.
Yeah, but this is like privately imposed fines.
Yeah, it's not government fines.
So yeah, that's weird. When your organization, your non-governmental organization fines you, you cannot write that off as a business expense.
Right. Not so like if Freedom Fiends had a swear jar and I owed you a Bitcoin every time I accidentally swore on the air, I could not write that off as a business expense.
Yeah, they'll figure out a way around that, though. It'll be something like, you know, the fine is used to pay for more equipment or training or something, and they'll write it off for that person somehow. I mean, the people with all the money pay the least amount of taxes, you know, percentage-wise. Not that I care about any fairness or anything, but not that I want to try. Well, I do care about fairness, but I don't want to try to get the government to fix the tax code or anything like that. It's ridiculous. It's like, you know, polishing the brass on the Titanic. But to use a Fight Club reference to bring it all the way around. But yeah, man, that is the reason that rich people can do that is because they can afford better tax prep people, you know, that just find every little way to do stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And plus, you know, let's say there's a politician that goes in there or a bunch of politicians that go in there and they actually clean everything up. Well, then, you know, the rich people will just buy the new politicians that replace them.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, anyway. So what was that, that crazy, consent law that they came up with?
Oh, the yes means yes law. Hang on. Let me find it. It's essentially, they're calling it affirmative consent. Here, I'll read it. So this is, I think, only in college campuses. It's in the education section. It says, colleges and universities must adopt a standard of clear consent for students engaging in sexual activity. Affirmative consent, in quotes, is required by both participants. And the reason affirmative consent is in quotes is because it means like verbally or in writing. Like it doesn't count like body language or like you're kind of like cuddling and things just go from like one thing leads to another. It's like, no, you have to ask permission every step of the way. As if there's like you ought to just get it in writing. And since, you know, then it's one word against another, you ought to get it like on film.
And, you know, this kind of stuff, it's very criticizable, but criticizing it kind of has this thing built in of like, oh, so you're in favor of rape. No, I'm not. I think rape is heinous. I think all women should carry guns, at least all sane ones. And I don't know whose job it is to determine who's sane and who's not, but a lot of liberals are crazy and liberals don't carry guns generally. So I guess that takes care of it, but
that's a self-fulfilling problem.
Yeah. This is something I keep seeing coming up on Law and Order, status victim squad stories. Cause there's a couple new seasons of that up on Netflix that I haven't seen. And it comes up like every four or five episodes where a woman is raped and talks about getting a gun, and Olivia, the, you know, woman who is the star of this show, who's a cop who carries a gun, talks the woman out of getting a gun. That's ridiculous, man.
Weird. I've never noticed that theme before.
Yeah. They repeat a lot of themes on there.
Yeah. I don't watch Status Victims.
Here, check this out. Here's in the internet, and this is related, and I'll explain why it's related in just a second. Victims of, quote, revenge porn can seek court orders to have sexually explicit photos posted by others removed from the internet and to ask for damages. So one thing is,
removing something from the internet, it's like taking pee out of a pool, to quote Joe Rogan on Joe Rogan's character on news radio.
But so here's why they've both incentivized and prohibited this. Because if you have an affirmative consent law, that means that if a person goes and accuses another person of rape, the first thing that person's going to want to do is post the video that proves that it wasn't.
Yeah.
Which is going to be classified as revenge porn,
right? It's weird, like crimes where the evidence of the crime is also a crime to have, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Well, let's take it all the way back full circle to Fight Club with Meatloaf. If you're, you know, if you have to get affirmative consent every single time and you're, you know, doing Paradise by the Dashboard Lights and you're doing the Phil Rizzuto thing, going through the bases and everything, you know, I mean, yeah, this is a little bit ridiculous. Oh, you have to sign here saying that I can do this.
And if you really want to take it all the way back to Meatloaf, Lou, I would do anything for love, but I wouldn't do that. All right, Redemption in the third act.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Redemption in the third act coming up here on the Freedom Fiends.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Yeah.
So I got lawyered.
I was laughing. I was listening to, in the background during the break, Dobby's wife is an attorney, and my wife is a paralegal, and you got lawyered. I get paralegal sometimes. I was listening to you, and I was like, so I'm not the only person who does this. Like, I say something on the radio, and if she's awake, and it's about law, and it's my, you know, what I think the law is, and, you know, it's never totally wrong, but it's kind of usually a vast oversimplification, and all of a sudden I'll be getting paralegaled. So tell us, Dobby.
So yeah, I've been lawyered. My wife is a civil rights attorney, and she came in here sort of waving, no, that's not right. So we're going to have an impromptu I was wrong segment.
Go for it.
And it's that non-disparagement and non-disclosure are incredibly different things. So non-disclosure agreements are when you're working for a company and they want you to not disclose company secrets and things like that, and you sign such a contract.
Yeah.
Non-disparagement is that you won't criticize them, that you have signed a contract or made an agreement not to criticize them, not to disclose them.
And, you know, some like a lot of consumer stuff has that hidden now, like to the point where companies are suing people for giving them a bad review on Angie's List, which is a weird free speech.
So that's what this
violation
sounds like it's about. It says that it's about Yelp. I looked up non-disparagement agreement, and it says the typical case is in an employment or dispute settlement contract. So to me, that means like you've sued a company, you've settled out of court. In that settlement, there is a non-disparagement agreement, meaning you're not going to take your settlement to Twitter and complain about them anyway.
Yeah, that's
which
pretty,
makes sense to me.
That makes sense too.
But if it's in like your iTunes sort of terms of service agreement that nobody reads,
in your Fiend Phone terms of service, if you ever mention, if you use Fiend Phone, and yeah, we should put that in the license. If you use Fiend Phone and you ever speak of the dropouts in this single episode that are unrelated to Fiend Phone.
And we'll know because you'll say it on Fiend Phone.
Yeah, because we'll put a back door in that'll just listen to all the Fiend Phone conversations.
The central scrutinizer.
No, we won't do that. And it is open source, so you can go read the code. And, you know, I've been learning that computer code is pretty easy to read. It's pretty hard to write, but most of it is actually written in human readable English these days. It's not in 0010101. Yeah, it's turned into that by the, you know, when you output it as a binary. But
or at least it rhymes with English.
Yeah. So,
yeah. So the reason I think this is law. Interesting, I mean, so I'm going to just read it, what it says here. This is about online reviews. Non-disparagement clauses in consumer contracts for goods or services in the state of California are now unenforceable. Therefore, businesses cannot use them for civil lawsuits against Californians offering opinions or reviews on internet sites such as Yelp. So part of me says, hey, you know, agreements should be enforceable. That's sort of like enforcement of contract is your like basement minarchist, your basic minarchist function of government.
Basement right? Minarch in your mother's basement yelling at people on the internet.
It's a function of government to your basement minarchist.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if we're talking about iTunes terms of service agreements or these like long things that you sign when you buy some piece of electronics about what you will and will not do with it, of course that's unenforceable. There's no meeting of the minds. Like that doesn't even meet the basic like contract common law, you know, of a valid agreement. So I don't know what this means, like most laws.
I learned something interesting today. In America, it's generally illegal if the license in a piece of software says it's not open source, it's not free software, it's you know, if they say like you cannot reverse engineer this and see how it works and they don't provide the source code, if you do that, which is possible, it's illegal in America and a lot of other countries, but there's some countries where that's legal, and one of them is France. It's like specifically legal to backwards compatible, like, you know, reverse engineer to see how a program works, not to copy it and make your, you know, steal it and make you know, so-called steal it, but to like make other hardware and software work with it better. It's legal in France. So a lot of times like products like Skype that are closed source and they're trade secrets, people in France will decompile them and reverse engineer them and then publish how they work for the rest of the world. I kind of like
that. Here's your redemption. Check this out. This is in the education section, and it's titled Bad Behavior. Schools can no longer expel students who willfully defy teachers or administrators at any grade level and cannot suspend students for that misbehavior third grade. So every student, stand up, get out of your seats, walk out of class, do whatever you want. You can no longer be punished for willfully defying school administrators in California.
That is a freedom fix. What, below third grade, though, they can, like, throw you in a hole?
Any grade level for expulsion, below third grade for suspension.
Wow. So
I guess they could still give you detention or something, but defy that.
Children, right. Become a cognitive dissident.
Thank you guys for your service. It's been wonderful. We'll fix
Thanks
the
for
network.
Having me, Michael.
Yeah, stick around for some tests. We're going to figure out what this was. Worms.
Worms.